The following program is for entertainment purposes only. The hosts of this show have no training as coaches or dietitians. Their attempts at long course triathlon and ultra running should not be taken as endorsement for you to do something stupid too. You should make your own bad decisions, then podcast about it. Now let's start the show.
This is John the Penguin Bingham reminding you, you've got a friend in the back of the pack.
After the race has already been won.
After all the podium names have been read.
When the last barricade is taken down.
And the finish line announcer is already hoarse.
When the food table is nearly empty.
And the massage tables are all packed up.
It's finally time for their arrival.
The Back of the Pack.
Back of Pack Endurance is a weekly podcast from two guys who really know how to bring up the rear. Whether it's running or triathlon, weight loss or training, let John and Andrew be your guides. Your slow, so very slow guides. With guests ranging from names you already know to the ones you wish you did, they make the most of the wide, wide world of endurance sports. If you're a world record holder, or the last one across the line, or the Jan Brady of the middle, you've got friends in the back of the pack.
We hope folks that are listening to us in Texas are safe from all the flooding right now. It's kind of a crazy world down there, but this is a little reprieve from whatever's going on in your life. This is the Back of Pack Endurance podcast. Hi, John.
Hi, Andy. You sound, are you trying to copy my sexy voice?
I am not.
No, you're kind of turning me on. I want to tell you that.
Well, that's good to know. But, no, John, I talk about Pennsylvania having two seasons, you know, winter and construction.
Yeah.
Well, this isn't construction. We have the thickest tree pollen allergy season ever.
Oh, my God.
Anywhere in the country you want to live, if you have, you know, if you're affected by tree pollen or just the general, what we call seasonal allergies, this is not the place to live for it.
Really?
And I haven't always been affected, but like a lot of things, it's something that just comes and goes in adulthood.
Yeah. I've even found down here that it affects me more the older I get, and I never had a problem with it growing up either. So,
well,
I'm sorry to hear that.
The trees are at it, man. They are looking to reproduce, and it's just gross because there is just green. You get a green film on things here, John.
Oh, you do here too.
Do you?
Yeah, absolutely.
It is just the worst right now. It is so thick and heavy. It is so bad right now, John, that I went out and I found a guy in a parking lot. Mm-hmm. And I bought some meth from him, John, just so I can try to convert it back to Sudafed. I'm trying to reverse engineer it right now.
Does it work that way?
Apparently it doesn't work that way. And that cop didn't buy my story either. Yeah. So we're
podcasting from the county jail.
Local pokey. Yep. that's right. Actually, our local jail burned down. I don't know if we talked about that in the show.
Oh, God.
No, I'm not even kidding. Wow, no, it's been months now, sometime over winter.
Mm-hmm.
Our county prison had a fire, and it's uninhabited right now.
Really? Yeah. So they just spread out all the inmates to other places?
They're farmed out to different places right now, and it's costing us a lot in transportation and all those kinds of things. And they're talking about, you know, where they're going to build, and it's kind of wacky, the ideas. There's one idea. This is so bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
So Sunbury, Pennsylvania has a riverfront that they try to do stuff with it, but, you know, there's not a lot they can do just the way. There's a nice new amphitheater down there past the flood wall, But there's a flood wall. Speaking of floods, anybody that lives in Pennsylvania or can remember the Agnes hurricane of 1972, it was a beast, and it destroyed a lot of Pennsylvania towns. The 72 flood is a formative event in the lives of people here. And I was born right after it, actually. Or no, wait, excuse me, right before it. I was a baby during the 72 flood. Mm-hmm. Now, my family lived about 5 miles from the river, so they weren't personally affected. But anyway, so a lot of some towns put up new walls afterwards. And so there's you drive down Front Street, you can't see the river because there's a wall there. But it's people love their wall. In fact, floods since, there have been graffiti. We love you, wall. you know, so.
Nice.
Yeah, so there's. Anyway, so the point is downtown Sunbury has this wall and, you know, riverfront property that some of it's, you know, kind of desirable, some of it's not. There's an old factory that went out, Celotex. They made something that, I don't know what it was, but it smelled terrible. But that manufacturing is gone now, and there's kind of an empty site. And there's talk among commissioners of buying that site to put up the new prison, which would be one thing, but what they want to add to it is crazy. I'm going to cough here a second, John.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that cough button is very helpful, but I'm going to use it a lot tonight.
Yeah. I'll know what's happening then if you go silent.
Yeah, exactly. they're talking about building like a multi-use area where, I mean, what that means in modern, you know, what, city planning?
Yeah.
Is like, okay, an area where you kind of combine residential and commercial, so you have a place where people will live, but also you've got the coolest coffee shop and a downtown, basically, all within the same few buildings, right? And there are places where that works very well, but Sunbury's not one of those places where hipsters are just knocking down doors to try to move in. We have so many empty properties in town, and we have a slumlord problem. Yeah. It is not a place that's going to revitalize from just building some new buildings and hoping that
young people
are going to move in and then put the prison there. That's the part of it. They want to put the multi-use, come and enjoy our coffee shops and our little quirky stores and live here and by the
watch
way,
the prisoners
and watch the and here's our county jail. So I don't know.
Is it one of those? Is it one of those things that they're thinking that if they just build something like that, people will come to it?
That has to be the logic.
Yeah,
I don't really know. Now we just had our primary for in Pennsylvania for local offices, and in the fall we'll be electing new county commissioners. But it's bizarre. I mean, now
I'm sure that'll be a hot topic then.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Well, first they wanted to take like this piece of land that the county owns. It's like this beautiful natural area where we got a lot of people get water from. Ah, let's just build a big prison right there. So thankfully there was enough outcry to leave some of the unspoiled area alone and not put it so far away because the county courthouse is in this town, you see.
Yeah.
And you have all the transportation cost of getting prisoners to and from court.
Yeah.
So the point actually the one that had the fire was like 2 blocks from the courthouse.
Makes sense. Right.
They're both very old. In fact, there's an old passageway under the streets from one to the other.
Okay.
And now the tragic part is not only going to be what happens when they rebuild. They needed to upgrade. It's a very old prison building. But it's the exterior of it is really interesting, and I'd hate to see it torn down. It looks medieval.
Mm.
I'm going to cough again.
So basically what you're saying is that it looks like it's, you know, the architecture of it is something that needs to be saved.
Yes, the architecture, it is historically, not only is it, the building itself has some, you know, the historical value as the architecture, but have you ever heard of, in your study of American history, the Molly Maguires?
Yeah, where have I heard of that? Yes, it does, actually.
I think they did a film that... I think what's his name was in it, the first James Bond.
Yeah.
You know, Sean Connery was in the movie about the Molly Maguires.
Yeah, where have I heard that before? Why? What? Well, that does ring a bell.
They're part of American history, very vital to labor and labor struggles in this country.
Yeah.
They were coal miners.
Yeah.
And the trial of many Molly. So Northumberland County is. Part of it is kind of coal country, but I'm thinking back then maybe the counties were even bigger because counties have changed shape since the 1850s. Mm-hmm. Or wait, when that was that? Now, 1850s. Now, here you go, John. Last week I was complaining about podcasters who don't know about what they're talking about. But this,
yeah.
This is not what the topic of the show is. This is a stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if you Google Molly Maguire's, the first thing that comes up.
I just did, yeah.
Is Jim Thorpe's, Molly Maguire's Pub and Steakhouse. Maybe that's just how
I didn't get that.
You know, that's interesting because Google will work locally. So for me, like I could, like that's, I'm in the market to actually go there. Yes. Okay.
My first thing is the Wikipedia, Molly Maguire's secret society in Ireland.
77 to 78. So I'm in Northumberland County was definitely at the west end, very, very edge of the Molly Maguire's territory as miners. Mm-hmm. But point being that this jail housed a lot of the Molly Maguire's who were convicted, and I believe some who were executed here. So I think that building could be an interesting landmark for, I don't know, for American history, for, you know, labor history, for, you know, social change. I don't know. But anyway, what was I on about? The jail burned down.
Yeah.
That's the kind of town I'm in, man. Yep, our jail done burned down. Oh, I'm not going there because I'm not buying meth for real. To turn into Sudafed because it's allergy season. That's how we got there, John.
Yeah. Well, you're right. But this whole idea of build it, they will come. I mean, it doesn't work so many times. You figure people would figure that out by now, that second guessing or forecasting a future of what people are going to want does not work. And we have a whole area in Tampa called Channelside.
Okay.
That's an example of that.
All right.
You know, Channelside is right where Emily Arena is, where the Lightning hockey team play. And now, it goes from there all the way around, right along the bay. It's like a beautiful area, but it's right by where the port is as well. So it's where all the cruise ships come in, but as well as all of the nasty port stuff. You know, the supplies and the freighters and come in. So. On one hand, it's a beautiful spot, but every business, it used to have a nice 3D cinema, bars, everything, you know, used to be there. I think there was a Hooters there at one time. You know, it's just a nice little.
Well, that's when you know you're coming up in the world, man. Yeah.
Well, when you had a nice little Riverwalk area, and it went to pieces. That's just like nothing there now. I think there's some bowling thing that's still there. But now that it's dilapidated and everything, but it's still a nice area. But now they're talking about, I guess, Bill Gates has gone in partnership with somebody locally and bought all of it. And that's where they're talking. And that's where they want to build, or one of the spots they're talking about building the new stadium for the Tampa Bay Rays, the baseball team. And if they do that, then that could revitalize that whole downtown area. But, and even the Rays stadium where they're at now in St. Pete is an example of they built that stadium 10 years before we had a baseball team. Yeah. It took them 10 years to get a baseball team, you know, and now it's, you know, so.
It is kind of crazy when you see, by the way, I figured out a way we can make this about triathlon in just a minute. this idea of, I mean, I'm from a small town rural area, so city planning isn't exactly something that I've had a lot of involvement in. Mm-hmm. But I want people that think that's an interesting topic to go over to Freakonomics Radio. Mm-hmm. And their May 6th episode was called Could the Next Brooklyn Be Las Vegas? They talked to the Zappos CEO. And basically there's parts of Las Vegas that are becoming, because of Zappos and other companies that decide to settle there or establish, you know, headquarters. They're having those kind of organically grown, you know, communities. Where people work and shop and play and everything all in the same area and aren't just traveling out to some other area. That can be, I mean, it's really great when you find a community that does that, but, you know, just the hope of like, well, maybe our crap town nobody wants to move to and has a reputation for being a crap town will suddenly not be if we build a new thing here and then we'll have people come in for that. Well, meanwhile, we had an event in the summer that was bringing thousands of people into town, a run, actually. The Tata Trot, it's called. It's for breast cancer.
Breast cancer, yeah.
And it's only a few years old, and they're up to over 3,000 people now. The young woman who put it forth, she's just a go-getter. And actually, my business is going to be a sponsor of it this year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were doing this in Sunbury, and they can't do it anymore. But I thought it was because Sunbury wasn't giving permits, and that is part of it. But it turns out that they can't control the train schedule, and the trains come through town, and that was interrupting the flow of the runs. So not having, and the train is, you know, it, there's a lot of different things that use the tracks. And I even know some people that work on the railroad now in my new job. So, but it just seems like for some reason, the kind of place where once we get something going, that's great. That does bring people back from out of town that normally wouldn't, you know, cross the river to come over. Now that's gone too. So I don't know, John, I don't know if I'll ever live on that site, whether in a hip new condo or in a jail. Because I, you know, tried to reverse engineer Sudafed.
Well, the jail is obviously a selling point, I would think.
Well, you know, why not?
I didn't tell you what. I don't know.
Oh, so
I think people just overthink things too much, you know, as just going through. People think they're smarter than they are.
Oh, you know? Well, John, I mean, you just nailed it right there.
Yeah.
The number of times where I have to step back and say, I think confidence is great.
Yeah.
And without confidence, you don't get much done. But, man, overconfidence without, you know, intelligence and wisdom to back it up is a dangerous thing.
Yes.
And with that, we've talked enough about Congress.
Well, yeah. That's a whole episode on its own, I think. So
anyway, I don't have a lot of, I mean, we have a couple articles we want to talk about. We want to talk about your race. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but I don't have. I mean, I'm tired of always coming on this show and being like, "Oh, here's why I'm sick or injured." I've had three surgeries this year, and now I'm just, you know, the trees are making me sick, John.
Well, everybody goes through those peaks and valleys, you know. Sure. So you know, you're just on that valley part, but you know, I think once it gets going, you'll be fine. You know, I'm always confident of that that people come out of it.
Yeah,
you know. So, yeah, but yeah, I had my first triathlon of the year Saturday. And,
would you say it's a triumphant return to the sport, John?
It was a return. It was a return to the sport. And it was one of those odd races that when I was done with it, I felt really good. In other words, I had no pain. I felt like I had a good race. Even though my time was probably one of the worst times I've ever had in a sprint triathlon ever, well over 2 hours. I mean, I was really only going for 2 hours and 5, you know, just trying to get back into the swing of things, and ended up at 2:13, but which is really bad for me, you know, because this same race I was doing in an hour 50, I think was my hour 47 was my best time ever in the 4 years I was doing it. So it was well off what I normally do, but you know, as I said, this year I was going to treat this year like a restart and kind of get a base level. I entered the swim and thinking the whole time that I was going to just race my race, not worry about anybody else, and came out of the swim less tired than I've ever been when I've exited the water.
Well, that's good.
I know. So it was almost shocking. That when I came out of the water and went to run through the soft sand to get to T1, that I felt like I had energy. Usually my heart rate is spiked and I feel tired already. And I don't know if it's just because I consciously made it a calm swim, that I just got in my own zone. I didn't get around other people until the very end, actually. It seemed to go very fast, even though it was a slow swim for me. It was a little over 14 minutes for me. And I've done that swim in 8.5, 9 minutes before. But, you know, I made it a point to stay calm and just swim it calmly. And exited water, got to T1, and felt really good. I got on the bike, and yeah.
John, swim calm. It seems to be like swim something calm. I might have heard. That's a phrase I don't know where, but it's ringing a bell for me.
Yeah, maybe it will come to us as we go through. It will come to us where we've heard that before.
Perhaps.
But got on the bike, and you know, it was my first it was my first race since having all the work done to it. And really felt strong on the bike too, and Jennifer and I always have this kind of like little, you know, ongoing competition in this race, because it's the only race that we start at the same time, because Clydesdales and Athena's are the last wave and they start together. So it's the only race we've ever been in that we go off at the same time. And I normally have a better swim than her, so I always get to my bike before she does. So the question is always, when is she going to catch me? You know, at what point in the race is she going to catch up to me? And it's usually I try to get the bike is a the course is a 7.5 miles out, 7.5 out and back. So the ongoing, you know, competition is, can I get to the turnaround before she catches me? So, and, you know, of course, we're standing on the beach going, she goes, so where do you think I'm going to catch you at this time? I said, well, hopefully after the turnaround. That's my thing. And she has her, she rides a Bianchi that, I don't know if you've been around a Bianchi, but.
Beyonce has bikes now? A what?
Well, am I not saying it right?
I don't know, dude. Bianchi? Spell that, man.
I am gonna get killed.
I have no idea. I don't know. No, I'm not making fun of, man. I have
Bianchi,
no idea what it
is. Bianchi, yeah. Bianchi race. Yeah, B-I-A-N-C-H-I. Bianchi.
Oh, okay, Bianchi.
Yeah.
I heard Beyonce in my head. I had to make a joke.
Okay. you made me second guess myself.
I'll do that.
A Bianchi bike, when you coast, clicks. So when she's coasting, I'll go tick, 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 like that. So it's always like I can hear her coming. And I felt like really good on the bike, you know, even though we had a headwind on the way out and I was still maintaining like 15, a little over 15, which was good for me. I think all these hill work that I've been doing with the Sentry training has helped. So I never felt really like I was burning or my legs were tired or anything. But I never heard that tick, 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 tick. And I turn. And, you know, I make the turnaround, and we've had a race before where I make the turnaround, and she was right there. I saw her face to face, and I didn't see her. So I thought, oh, something's up, you know. So, you know, I'm hoping that she, you know, didn't have a problem.
Wait a minute. You had a much slower swim time, right?
I had a much slower swim time. She was behind me in the swim.
Oh, she was. I was going to say, is it possible she beat you out of the water this time?
No, she didn't. Okay. No, right. She didn't. I would have seen her in T1.
Okay.
Yeah. that would have been something. And I saw her, I guess I was about mile 9 or 10. I finally saw her, and it turned out that she had an issue with her chain coming out of T1 and lost like 3 or 4 minutes trying to get her chain unstuck from her derailleur. So that's what slowed her up. But I actually beat her into T2, which I've never done. And, I saw her coming in when I was heading out to the run, saw her coming in. And then I was cussing you a little bit on the run because
I wasn't even there.
I know,
Saturday,
but I started
was here in Pennsylvania. What'd I do?
I'm on the run, and you know, normally within the first half mile, I can't run anyway. So I just try to walk fast and get my legs back under me. When I start to run, I start getting this stabbing feeling in my knee, and I said, "Damn it, he's giving it to me."
Oh man.
It turns out, well, there's what we've all talked about, Crystal River, that even though it's a fast course, the run part is on an embankment. So it's off. So every time I tried to run, I would get this like stabbing pain in my knee. So I ended up walking most of the first half, and that's where she caught me. So she caught me before the turnaround at the mile 1.5 mark where we turn around, and she caught me. She got about 50 yards ahead, maybe not 50 yards, maybe about 50 feet ahead of me. And I was just following her. And that's where it helped me because she has such a fast walk that I was just maintaining pace with her, even on my walks. And when we did the turnaround, I managed to get to a flat part. It's on the other side of the road and I could start running. And I caught her with about maybe half a mile to go. And we were doing a hopscotch thing. You know, when I walked, she would catch me. And then when I ran, I would go ahead. But I ended up getting.
Don't you call that hopscotch? Don't you mean leapfrog?
Yeah, leapfrogging, okay. Hopscotch. Yeah, you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
but ended up finishing back about 3 minutes ahead of her. But which means like if she hadn't had the bike issue, we would have been right there. It was kind of nice finishing around the same time. But ended up having like an hour. My goal was to do a 12 and a half 12 to 12 and a half swim. I did a 14, so I was a little off there. I was planning for a 15 bike, and I ended up at 15, so I was right on with my bike. Ended up, and I wanted to do a 45 run, and ended up with a 51 because of that first mile and a half. But the last mile and a half, I was right on pace. So
when you say 15 bike, what are you referring to?
15 mile an hour bike. An hour bike.
Okay.
Even though I have done faster, I was trying to let me work up to it and see what, you know, I was trying to be a little bit cautious on my goal. So like I said, I was shooting for a 205. I got a 213 and change. But the way I look at it is that, you know, it sets a goal. I have two more races there this year. So it gives me kind of a goal to shoot for in the next two races.
Now you've talked about the series. This is part of that same series you've done a couple years.
Yeah. This is the Crystal River series, okay, which is three races. So we have one the weekend after the Century Ride. It's Century Ride is 2 weeks next weekend after this, and then the weekend after that is Crystal River 2, and then there's another one in September. So, and then we have another series in Claremont, which is actually four races, but we missed the first one because that's the same week as the Century. So we missed. So we'll have a series three series in Claremont, and a three series in Crystal River. The Claremont series is a little bit, it's a 10-mile bike, but there's a lot more climbing. There's a few really good climbs on that one, so it ends up evening out a little bit. But so, I mean, it was I felt actually kind of good, even though the time was really slow. I felt really good about it because I didn't feel like I had to crawl in bed for a day or two afterwards. You know, I was fine. So that was little victories, I guess they call it.
So. Cool, man. Well, I'm glad you had a good day.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that knee pain makes you think of me.
Well, it's you just had the surgery. It's like, and it's the same knee I had the surgery on. Yeah. It's like, damn it, why is this doing that? And
you know,
when she caught me, she said it's the embankment. I said, oh, that's what's doing it. It's because my legs are all wonky right now. So as soon as I got to the flat, it was amazing. As soon as I turned and got to the other side of the road where it was flat, I was running fine and no pain at all. So that's what it was.
It does just remind me though, John, that, you know, we do this show and, it's like having an audience that you don't know is there. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes we do. People do respond. My other show that I just started is a much smaller audience.
Yeah.
So we're getting even less feedback, but what we do is really is very detailed. Though what's weird is I know our super fan in Delaware, Megan Nonasinkum, she listens to my Twister podcast.
She does.
I don't know why. Bless you. She even messaged me with a question that we'll get into on the show. It was really funny. But what was I saying? Yeah, so people listen to our show and they can relate to us as back of pack people. But you hear the same voice, and it's it gets in your head. And the experiences you and I have had, sometimes maybe somebody's that had similar experience, or more likely, you know, one of our guests. We've had many from the front, middle, and back of the pack, and they'll offer up things, and maybe an experience you have will, that you'll hear on this show will help relate to something you're doing. I think that's a great thing. But I am not going to take credit for people's bad decisions, like I say in the promo. And so I'm calling her out, my neighbor, neighbor in podcast terms over here, nurse Stephanie, if you do Heiner and you get hurt, that is not my problem. That is not my problem. She's been posting on Facebook that, you know, now Andy put it in my head about this thing about Heiner. Now I'm obsessed with it. Well, okay. You're a grown up. You can figure out if you want to do it or not. I'm not going to pressure anybody, but I'll just say, it's the hardest thing you'll ever do, and then you have bragging rights, you know. So
I don't mind people saying that John Harris got in my head about this. I said, yeah. I'm glad.
Yeah, you know you're influential.
Yeah, I got a woman that works with me. You have to call her a woman. They're girls to me because they're so young, but she's actually in her 30s, but is just starting to run. And you know, and when she found out I brought in the bike one day because I don't want to keep it locked out. I work where I work. It's also a residential group home for children, for kids that have issues. So right. Leaving your bike on your car might not be the best thing in the world. You know?
Right.
So,
So, well, and I don't mind. I mean, I'm just, I think it's humbling. The
it
idea
is.
That
it,
something
it,
that
it
we
is.
Would say or do would influence somebody or they thought of us when they were running or
right.
something. That's, you know, it's really, it's a nice thing.
Or, it's shocking sometimes. That's what I'm saying. She saw the bike and, you know, she started asking me questions about it. And now she's like, she tagged me that, she can't wait to show me the new shoes she bought because I kept telling her she's not using the right shoes. That's why she's having knee pain because she's just buying the cheapest ones she could find, you know,
for the bike.
For her run.
Oh, for her run.
She saw the bike, which started the conversation.
Well.
Yeah. And she just had a pair of Nikes, you know, off the shelf, you know, Walmart Nikes, you know. And I say, you got to pay attention to shoes. That's why you got the knee pain. You know, get the right shoes and that knee pain will probably go away. You know, so.
Well, I was just thinking, John, we mentioned Mad Men. I know you don't watch it, but if I didn't hate the weasel Pete Campbell so much, I might say, a thing like that. That was his, like, response to, like, congratulating somebody. a thing like that. Anyway, I don't know why I was just thinking that. So you're kind of Coach John now to a few people, an inspirational John, and that's
yeah. I would never call myself a coach, but
get good shoes is about the level of some people's coaching.
Others are better. I tell them to. Well, because especially if you're not coming from it, and to be honest, you know, not everybody that works where I do. I mean, you have the same issue, I'm sure. They're a bunch of social workers. You know, they don't make a lot of money.
Right, right.
They can't go out there and spend $150, $200 on shoes every 3 months. You know, they're like right. I am. So, you have to. But what I tell them is that if you're really going to use them, it's a good investment because. You're just not going to feel right unless you do it, you know. And you're going to end up getting hurt. And
oh no, my iPad just booted.
It's
rebooting. And the reason that matters is, John, I've been making notes. I did come up with stuff that we need to talk about tonight. Oh, wait, it's back. Okay, my gosh, that was fast. That scared me. I'm sorry. I freaked out in the middle. You were in the middle of a thought or at the end of one. I don't know.
No, I was at the end of one.
But, I thought you were kind of at the end. Yeah.
I have to say, I mean, because we are recording this on Memorial Day, we should say Happy Memorial Day to everybody.
Is this something you say Happy Memorial Day?
Well, I don't know. You know, did we talk about that before?
It's an observance. It's an observance.
It's, so you should say.
In fact, Megan and I decided we really should never host a picnic here because we're right by a cemetery. And like, if people want to come and pay their respects on a day like that, like any day that, I mean, there's randomly people here all the time. Don't get me wrong, but.
Yeah,
I just wouldn't want to like a day like Memorial Day be somber. Now we go to my parents; we do go to a party and everything. But
that's a good point.
It's hard to. Well, you know the saddest though, John. I'm not trying to step over Memorial Day, but just while I'm thinking of it, dude, Mother's Day here. Oh my gosh, it was heartbreaking.
Just
seeing all the people going to the cemetery on Saturday, Mother's Day afternoon, because that's where Mom is.
Yeah,
like it's a Mother's Day visit. And I'm like, oh. I mean, any visit to the cemetery is grief, obviously, but like, it's just like the theme of like, oh, I bet this is all like mother's visits. Oh my goodness. So
I spent the day.
So you were acknowledging Memorial Day.
I was acknowledging Memorial Day because I spent the day watching Band of Brothers. Have you ever seen that?
You know, John, I haven't. And that's one that's on my list.
Oh,
what's wrong with me here?
Andrew.
I happen to have an HBO Go password in my possession right now.
That actually should be required viewing, I think. In school. I think they should use that show.
Really?
It's so well acted and you'll be kind of it's kind of fun to watch it now because it's been out 14 years now. It was recorded, it was filmed in 2001, but even some of the people that are in there and you know about it, right? It's active,
but they
have little vignettes where they're talking to the actual people that are characters in the show. That were the real people. A lot of them are gone now.
Sure.
You know, so it's kind of interesting to see that. And another interesting part is to watch it now and to see all the actors that are in that show that are well known now that were not when that show was made.
Right.
Tom Hardy's in it. Bane, the guy that played Bane, he's in it. And
Mad Max right now in the theater.
Yeah, Mad Max right now. But Jimmy Kimmel's in it. And. Yeah, he plays a Jeep driver in one episode. Hmm. Colin Hanks is in it as an officer in one episode.
And isn't Tom Hanks a producer on this?
Yeah, yeah. So that's why Colin was in it, I'm sure. But the guy who, I don't know all the actors' names, but two X-Men are in it. The guy that played the young Professor Xavier and the one that played the young Magneto are in it.
Fassbender? Michael Fassbender?
Yeah, he's in it. Yes, he's in it. Well, the main guy. Does he play an Englishman? No, he doesn't. Mm-hmm. The main guy that plays Winters is English, too. He's the guy from Homeland.
Homeland?
Homeland.
Do you mean Homeland?
Yes, Homeland. Homeland.
This is the night I pick on the way you say things.
But yeah, I'm telling you, man.
Yeah, that would definitely be.
It's just something. Anybody hasn't seen that. I mean, it's definitely, you know, it's 12 episodes. It's, you know, it's a long viewing, but it's so well done, and it's true. Yeah. It's a true story. You know, so they took very few liberties with it.
Right.
So it's actually from Major Winter's book, Band of Brothers, and
right.
So and actually, there's another character in it. His name is Webster, Private Webster, and he was lost at sea in 1961. He was an author and actually wrote for the Saturday Evening Post, but he was in Easy Company as well. And he had written a diary that wasn't published until Stephen Ambrose found it and had it published. And he actually has a couple episodes where it's his monologue telling the story from his point of view within it. So it's very well done. And especially on Memorial Day, I think it's, you know, any day like this is a good show to watch. It's just one of those, you don't know everything that happened that these guys went through. And you know, I mean, if you don't know the story of Easy Company, they hit the beach in Normandy. They were at the Battle of the Bulge, and they're the ones that captured Eagle's Nest. So wow. It's the same people all the way through this, all wow. this 4 years, you know, so it was very interesting.
Hmm. So let me ask you this, John, I've seen a few postings like this, and it makes sense, but I want your opinion as a vet. That was basically the sentiment is, don't thank us vets on Memorial Day. We have Veterans Day. This is the day for those who didn't get to come back to get thanked.
I agree. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The Veterans Day is for everybody that served. Memorial Day is those that served and did not get them come home.
Right.
You know, which is way too many. The last count was 2.8 million plus. And it's crazy in that number of people.
I saw a British flag flying on a house today, and no, I mean, I'm not a super patriotic guy as far as like symbolism, but it seems I'm like, it's Memorial Day, dude.
Of all days. Yeah. That's to me, that's them trying to make a point, and I don't get that point.
Yeah. And I mean,
it's kind of like the people flying a Confederate flag. What's your point?
Like, I mean, England's our ally, certainly. And, you know, it's the 21st century. I get it. But it's like, come on, man.
Yeah.
You know, there's a couple days. Like, don't do that on the 4th of July. Don't do that on Memorial Day.
Yeah.
Come on. Easy with the Austin Powers. All right. So, John, I have four things listed on my pad now, and I only told you one or two of them.
Okay.
Excuse me.
So I'm going to be talking.
Well, just wanted to mention, you know, I was kind of joking about the, you know, the Heiner Challenge and the trail running thing and our listener, Steph. I just saw this. This article's on competitor.com. Just was published 12 hours ago. So a Boulder trail runner named Dave Mackey, who would be well known among trail running enthusiasts, survives a gruesome mountain accident. Elite ultra distance trail runner Dave Mackey is recovering in stable condition after sustaining severe leg injuries that resulted from a fall off a rocky ridge near the top of Bear Peak in Boulder. The dramatic rescue took several hours to get him off the mountain, and he had surgery to repair shattered tibia and fibula bones in his left leg. So he may or may not be back to running. It makes the news because this guy is one of the top mountain runners in the U.S. and was considered a contender for Western States 100 this year. But he's laid up for at least a time, if not permanently. It just, you know, trail running is dangerous. I joke about it on this show. How, like, the trail runs I've done, I could have done in a lot less time if I wasn't feeling for the step ahead of me 40 times. And I was I'm not sure-footed at all. And I'm talking about situations and trails that are pretty minor compared to what could the running in Colorado and out west in general. But anyway, so we want to say from the running community, we're wishing for a good recovery for ultra runner Dave Mackey.
Yeah, did you hear about Dean Potter? You know who he is?
Was that the base jumper guy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I don't know, man.
I know, it's so hard to comment on that, isn't it?
It's tragic, but it's also like when somebody dies doing something that is specifically designed to be death-defying every time you try it.
Yeah.
It's terrible, but it's like...
It's almost like... It's a very hard thing to comment on, isn't it?
Yeah, you...
Because it's almost like, well...
I know, man.
It's kind of... It sucks to see job description, isn't it?
It sucks to see anybody that young die that tragically, but why are you doing that? You know,
I almost look at it, and people are going to hate me.
That's my own ignorance of it. But go ahead.
Yeah. I was to say people will probably hate me for saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I look at it because you know, if he's married and has kids and he's doing stuff like this, it's almost selfish to me. You know, it's like you're not thinking of your family. You're not thinking of your family when you're doing this stuff now. You know, if you're single and you're out there and, you know, and you want to, you know, defy death and do things like that, or like you're one of the Sherpas that have to do that to support your family on the meager stuff that they're paying these Sherpas to go up Everest, you know, you don't really have a choice, but, you know.
Now, here's a question, though. Now, I just Googled it now.
Mm-hmm.
A few days ago. A 73-year-old base jumper died after setting a parachute on fire. That seems to be a little extreme.
Yeah.
I don't know why you'd set your
parachute. Why would you do that?
Well, there's got to be some. Well, no. I don't know if there's always a reason. Well, now we're going to do a whole show about people who've died doing risky things. He set his parachute on fire as part of the stunt. A graphic video, Twin Falls, Idaho, of the fatal jump posted to YouTube shows someone engulfed in flames and falling from the Perrin Bridge in the Snake River. James, he was 73 years old. I think you'd know better by then. But I mean, I don't want to sound like, I mean, Dean Potter, I don't know if he had kids, but you know what, dude, even if you're a guy in your 20s without children or a wife, or, you know, you probably have a mom or a dad that doesn't want to see you do that. I mean, I don't know. And I mean, to me, it's like, people say, well, you know, better than to burn out than to fade away, better than, you know, never live than, you know.
But,
and I get that, but it's like, what, the only choices in life are sit in a chair and die of lung cancer by watching TV and smoking, or you have to be a base jumper and never and take risks. So, like, that's the options in life.
I think it just comes down to the fact that it's certain people are just these adrenaline junkies.
Sure.
They have to do it. I saw a great I know. Well, you have HBO, your login, so you could probably watch this.
I can watch HBO, yes.
A Real Sports with Brian Gumbel. I don't know if you probably never watched it because it's a sports show, but
wow.
You know what I know how you are about that. But this is such a great story.
It's the oddball stuff, sure.
Well, this one you'll like, I think, because it's very motivating, I guess. Motivating, yeah, inspirational. It's a kid. There's a guy. I can't call him a kid now. He's in his late 40s now. Had the disease when he was born that gradually ate away his eyesight. So by the time he was 13, he was blind. And so his father was a Marine. His mother, you know, they're very both active. And they decided when he was growing up that they weren't going to let that define him, that they kept him doing sightful things, even though he was losing his sight. And now he's climbed all the highest peaks in the world. He's climbed all of them as a blind person. I can't think of his name, and I'm trying to think of his name now, but it was like really inspirational. And now when he was doing the worst rapids in the Grand Canyon as a blind person, he has someone in his helmet telling him how to steer his kayak because he's totally blind.
Wow.
He can't see at all. I can't even imagine having the guts to do something like that. How scary that has to be, you know, especially when you're going upside down, you're going in the water.
I don't know how scary it is if you're blind, you can't see the risk. I'm kidding. That was terrible. those kinds of things do inspire us.
In his case, I can see why he's doing it because he's trying to show, you know, he's trying to make people aware that blind, just because you're blind shouldn't limit you. and what you could do and what you what you're able to do.
But I think the base jump, I mean, somebody also say something like Dean Potter was also trying to show people to push limits. So I'm going to I want to send you this article, John, for the show notes, because I think I want to be fair. And this is from The Guardian in the UK. The title of the article is "Did Rules Not Risk Cause Dean Potter's Base Jumping Death?" Mm-hmm. Now, this might be akin to saying that Eric Garner, the guy that got choked, was that the guy that got choked out by police in New York City? That if there hadn't been cigarette taxes, it wouldn't have happened. I mean, I don't know if it's that kind of argument.
Yeah.
But there was somebody here, like a good point. A friend of his named Cedar Wright had posted a tribute shortly after news broke, and he was very bothered by the vitriol on his Facebook page. But he came to interpret it as discomfort. Quote, "The easiest way for someone to respond to someone like Dean is just to be like, well, he's an idiot, or he deserved it, or F that guy. We are all caught in our own paradigm, and the scariest thing is to encounter someone who shatters it, who forces you to reexamine your own life." So, okay, I hear what that guy's saying, but, like, you, again, is the only way for me to shatter my paradigm to do shit where I could get killed instantly? Like, you know, maybe it's riskier in life to actually, like, go to work and have a job and raise kids in a world that is full of crap and, like, raise the next generation to make it better. Mm-hmm. You know what? As a dad, I'm thinking I contribute a lot more to the world and bust people's paradigms by raising two little kids who so far have no concept of how to be racist.
Right.
You know, that's a heck of a lot harder. So I don't know, this idea that anybody who, you know, who raises that's an eyebrow base jumper is like, well, you're just, man, you're just stuck in your suit and your stupid world, man.
That's
get out of it. Like, dude, that's so
an argument. I don't like that argument.
And, you know, like, it's not, life isn't all a movie where you get to walk away. Like, these, and this guy didn't get to walk away. And, you know, yeah, okay, he lived life on his terms, so I'm not going to crap on that. But the idea that that's the only kind, like, that's pioneering, but other things aren't because you can't get killed instantly. I don't know, man. I think Rosa Parks is a heck of a lot more of a pioneer, and she actually put, and her life could have been on the line, too.
Right.
I don't know. It's just frustrating to see, like, that that's. And so, well, the whole thing about the rules that this article is getting into is the thing is that, that base jumping is illegal in all of these places.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're saying that many in the extreme sports community say you don't need videotape to know that the constraints placed on base jumpers increase the danger. So there's this whole argument where they're making the saying that you go to Switzerland where base jumping is legal and very popular and there are fewer fatalities per base jumper. Okay.
I don't know if that's true logic.
I'm sure that's true, but what's then the argument? So what does that mean? So in Europe, you have the leisure of waiting for ideal weather and visibility. In some of the best places to jump in the U.S., you don't. That makes an already dangerous activity more dangerous. Oh, so
doesn't mean you have to jump.
That's right, exactly. So in other words, by saying, okay, we've made rules that you really shouldn't jump off of this thing. Well, now, man, you just made it more dangerous for me to jump. So I'm forced to jump when I can get there, regardless of weather, because you made it illegal. That's ridiculous. That is some specious reasoning, man.
Yeah, that's false logic there. That's ridiculous.
Specious reasoning sounds like I went to law school.
Yeah, it does.
I did not.
It's a good word, though.
It's sad, man. And you know, again, I mean, whether the man would have no regrets, I'm not going to judge him for that, but I can't laud that as, like, heroic.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
And there's so many other things that take years of influence on the people around you and building maybe a community or a society that are risky and don't have immediate reward and never make the newspaper that is of a great value to the world. And so, you know, we all find a way to justify our addictions. And so an adrenaline junkie will find poetic ways to say how they're pushing other people's paradigms. But you might just need the thrill, man. And it's okay to just say that.
You know? Yeah.
I mean, there's stuff
That's where I come from is then if that's what the issue is, you're adrenaline junkie and you're addicted to that. Just say that. Don't try to convince me that it's some higher calling is the reason you're doing this.
Well,
because, you know,
and so, John, if we're going to take that argument, maybe we then we have to maybe start examining some things that mean So in the running world, and I know you're involved in a charity, mm-hmm. you know, I know that I have been tempted to try to shoot for some really big thing I want to get into, but the only way I could do it is if I do a charity slot. Mm-hmm. So like, let's say I found a way to do a Kickstarter to say, if I get enough money, I can buy one of the Kona slots, mm-hmm. but all the money goes to charity. So this is a charitable thing, right? Help me help others, when really it's about me wanting to do a thing. And charity running is huge. And heck, I'm starting a new 5K that the proceeds go to charity. But the idea of running for a cause or doing a triathlon for a cause. Now, if we start getting in that territory, that's going to make our listeners and ourselves a little more uncomfortable, because don't we at some level say, take a thing we want to do and then apply charity to it as a justification?
Well, you know? I think there's some truth in that, though.
Yeah, I mean,
to be quite honest, and the fact that I don't know if that's why I've pulled out of a lot of those things, but now it's less of for me. It used to be like, I want to do this race, is team and training involved in this race? Mm-hmm. So if they are, then I'll do it for team and training, because that gives me a way to get into this race.
Sure.
Now it's almost like I look at what team and training has this year, what races they're going to be doing. And if it's and I know I don't want to do an Ironman or a half Ironman, I don't look at them anymore. I said, well, I want to do this century ride. Oh, here's team and training's involved in this. Now I'll do that. So I choose it the opposite way now.
Right.
I'm not using team and training as my way into something that, one, I may not be ready for.
Right.
And using that as the excuse, well, I'm doing it for charity, so it's for a good cause. And, you know, even though it is, but, it's more like, what am I able to do, and can I raise money to do this as well?
Right.
And so it's a different way of looking at it.
It's a good balance, because, I mean, I would never encourage people to say, oh, you're right, it's kind of weird and hypocritical, so let me not do any charity stuff. Not that that's not the point. But at what point do we take our charity to be a nice vehicle for what we already want to do? And I'm not saying I don't do it. I do it myself. So
mm-hmm. I think, yeah.
That's where we start
writing that line, that, you know, that's why you have to be very, you know, and it happens to me all the time. I'll come out against something that, and then someone will point out to me, well, you do that.
Yeah.
You do it over here. And I'm like, oh God, you're right. I do that. You know, and it makes me see it. It's like, oh yeah, I do.
I think I just remember back in the days of, like, and this still exists, like you'd pledge money to a charity, and maybe kids were going to all do something. Like, for every dollar you give, we do this, mm-hmm. you know? So like the rock and roll-a-thons and all those kinds of things, people would do a thing for as long as you pledged. And then that turned into, well, we're just going to do it for this timeline. Mm-hmm. Pledge money for the event. At some point, just go, let me just give you money for the charity. You don't have to go walk there from there to there. But people like to feel like they're doing something, and there's nothing wrong with that. But
right.
Be honest about whether you're doing a thing for charity or whether you shoehorn charity into a thing you already want to do as an excuse. That's why I feel...
excuse to do it, yeah.
I mean, I love combining them. I really do. And we've talked about that on the show a million times, ways to combine charity and your endurance mm-hmm. sports. But
I think what you do is like I was saying, I think what you do is you choose the race you want to do, like, and then decide, is there a charity involved in this that I can do as well?
Yeah.
You know, you do it that way. You choose the race first, not the, you know what I mean? I don't know if that's coming out the right way.
Right. Well, like,
but holding up a mirror to your, you know, having someone hold up a mirror to you.
Yeah.
You know, when the way, you know, I was going to talk about this a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know what it is, but Megan, you know, my coach Megan Fanning kind of did that to me a couple of weeks ago. And I was going to bring it up on here because of how, you know, we've talked a lot about how my blog is called Fat Slow Triathlete, and yours is called Doughboy to Ironman. And we identify ourselves as back of pack endurance and back of pack people. And at what point do we become so identified with those roles that we subconsciously hold ourselves back to, in order to meet that goal, to meet that? You know what I'm saying?
I did it in my first season.
We got into Megan and I got into a deep back and forth texting discussion about this, and it's hard to look at it and say, wow, am I doing that? Am I saying, well, it's okay if I hold myself back because I'm the fat, slow triathlete anyway. So it doesn't really matter. You know, am I doing this? I don't think I am, but am I?
Right.
You know? And, well, yeah, when you can get into that and, wow.
I mean, I was thinking about our friend Derek, who was on the show, Derek Mitchell.
Yeah.
I've been seeing him on Facebook. He's got, you know, he's got all these 5Ks lined up, and he's been
getting
some media out of it, and this has been great, and he keeps doing better. Mm-hmm. But at some point, I know Derek doesn't want to stay nearly 600 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when he gets down to 300, it won't be as newsworthy. And I hope for Derek that he doesn't get too, you know, maybe he's listening to the show. Don't get too, you know, let that's really motivating to have people come out and cheer you on when you're that big and you're just moving 3 miles and it's a Herculean feat to do. And I think, you know, that's even beyond what John and I have ever experienced. Yeah. I would hate for that to be the whole story for him. I want to see him do better. I want to see him get to a healthy, sustainable weight, regardless of whether his 5K PR is better than an hour, 10 minutes or not. I could care less about that.
Mm-hmm.
I would, like, if I put on a 300-pound pack right now, could I do that? I don't think I could.
I don't think
I couldn't carry. You know what, dude? I couldn't carry 300 pounds for 100 yards.
Yeah. I can't even imagine it. So
I'm still blown away by him doing it. But, you know, yeah, at what point is it tempting if you're somebody who's known for that extremeness?
Yeah, then, if you're identified as that, by that parameter, you're identified by that. What happens when you're not identified by that anymore? Are you still going to want to do it?
Well,
are you going to become so identified with it that you're going to hold yourself back to stay identified with it?
Or in another case, John, to bring full circle, if you're known as the extreme jumper guy, how do you ever pull back?
Right.
If people remember Dean Potter's name. If being remembered is important to a person, they'll do a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not imposing my judgment on what the man's motivations are, but certainly if you want to push people's limits, you don't do that by now scaling back what you used to do. And that got a man killed. And so, you know, it's man, that Greek golden mean that apparently is the, you know, the healthy balanced life, is something that is so elusive. And for some of us, it doesn't seem to always come into focus. So John, with that in mind, do you want to respond to the phrase "all things in moderation" as part of that Greek golden mean?
That is one of the most irritating things people can say to me nowadays. I hate it. And
say why though, John, because in and of itself, it is not an offensive thing.
No, I won't say it's offensive, but it's just because it seems such a easy way out for me to hear somebody say that to me. And were you on that string? Did you see all that going on? You know, it's the same old stuff. People start talking about nutrition and sugar and stuff like that. And someone's always going to pipe in with that. Well, you know, everything in moderation, one piece of candy is not going to kill you, you know, and things like that. And
you know, who says that? People who don't eat candy.
Right. Or people that don't,
you never eat just one piece of candy.
Right. Or people that don't have a problem with it. And
right.
And that's where people lose it. And of course somebody said it and I didn't even get into a discussion about it. Honestly, I said, there it is. The old, you know, everything in moderation argument. Someone's got to say it, you know? And then honestly, people jumped in, not against me this time. Usually people come attacking me about it, but, I don't even remember what board it was on. It's probably it might have been over on Barbieri's board on fitness and the fitness board that he has. That you know what my point is that you know as we've said before is that you want people. I think it comes from people who don't think overeating and sugar is an addiction.
Right.
They don't see it that way, so they say, have a donut. You know, donut's not going to hurt you. One donut's not going to kill you because they don't truly see that as an addiction. Because you would not tell an addict, as we've said before.
Because they know how to eat one donut.
Right. You would not tell an addict, you know, a recovering alcoholic, just have a drink. No drink's not going to kill you. You wouldn't say that to them. Or you wouldn't say, you know, someone who's addicted to cocaine, you know, and is trying to get off cocaine, you know, don't just take a bump. It's not going to kill you.
You know, and
you wouldn't say that.
But I think it comes down to back to something we've talked about on the show before. Like, okay, we mentioned the cemetery in grief already. People have no idea what to say to somebody in grief. They have no concept. I've watched
right.
it.
Right, right.
So they say either nothing or they don't show up or they say something weird and awkward.
Yes.
That they right. feel it may be, or they say something so insipid and pointless as to be inoffensive because mm-hmm. they don't want to say something wrong. And I understand that impulse. I understand. I don't want to say something stupid here, so let me say something soft and meaningless because it's what people do. How's the weather? You know, it's what small talk is. Well, you mm-hmm. and I are guys who don't suffer small talk well, so we take conversation actually mean something, and that gets us, John, in trouble.
Yeah.
So, like, we will be pedantic over, no, fat and muscle can weigh the same or they don't have to. You need more mm-hmm. than weight to know what we're talking about. So we don't right. like that phrase, fat weighs the same as muscle. It's yes, it's about density. We know that. But so we like to further yeah. the conversation, and I get why that is annoying when we do that. But when somebody says all things in moderation, I think what I'm trying to read them in the best possible light. They're trying yeah. to say something small talky that is just a dodge to the actual conversation, because how hard is it to get in a conversation with a fat person about overeating? Do you know what yeah. I mean? Like, right. and I don't want to be on the other side of a conversation about that with me. Oh my gosh. I don't ever want to be, I pity anybody who gets in a conversation with me about food
that I haven't initiated.
Right. Well, you know? I pity the ones that get in a conversation with me that I have initiated too. It's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable. It's awkward. And I'm probably going to say things that make them, you know, very,
feel
very
bad.
Worried.
Feel bad.
So yeah. So people say, they'll just say, well, you know, all things in moderation, because it's an easy thing to say. It seems like, and it's comes from that place of, I don't know, baseline kind of chit chat. Mm-hmm. But because how many people in your life can you really have that deep conversation with about eating as a disorder or as a compulsion, or even use that word addiction? Not a lot of people in our lives do we talk about such intimate stuff with in a real way.
Right.
Is my, you know, so I guess I know for myself, I got to cut people slack in, like, look, you're not going to have the real conversation with me, so let's just let this at the small talk level. And on the small talk level, yeah, fine, everything in moderation. Makes mm-hmm. sense till you talk to, you know, somebody with a problem. And
somebody that really has an issue with it. Yeah.
And there's only so many people that I can talk about that issue with, you know, except for, you know, podcasters listening in by the hundreds or whatever it is, dozens. The tens, John, the tens.
The tens.
Yeah.
The tens. Now, we actually are building a pretty good audience here, I think.
Yeah, we are. We are.
What I'm seeing.
Yeah,
so.
I think we are, actually, which is, again, it's telling. It's not, you know, our stories, other people's stories, that the idea that the back of the pack is an identity. And so, well, you know, at what point are you holding yourself back on purpose? I don't know.
I think if you ask me that, like if when Megan asked me that, no, I'm not doing that. But then the more we discuss it, God, am I doing that?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, yeah, and
if you're doing something subconsciously, you're not going to figure it out right away.
Right. You have to talk it through. And I like to think that I'm enough of an open person that can see my own faults. I mean, I admit freely when I'm wrong about something, if someone could point it out to me, you know, it doesn't happen very often.
Well, and that sounds if you can show me what's wrong with me, I'll believe you.
As long as you don't come across condescending to me, I'm all ears, you know, and prove to me I'm wrong. But if you come across like, you idiot or something like that, then yeah, you're going to have a problem with me.
Yeah. I don't like that. Or on the opposite side, I don't like pandering.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, treat, you know, cause pandering, you know, being patronizing just treats a person like they're an idiot and
right.
like they, you know, they couldn't handle the opposite. But John, we're hard men to talk to. I think that's what we really need to put out there.
I think Jennifer would agree with you.
I think, yeah. And I think it's okay for us to admit it and own that, yeah, a lot of the stuff we want to talk about, maybe we podcast and do this because you and I can talk about this stuff with each other, let mm-hmm. other people listen in.
Right.
But, you know, when it really comes down, I mean, there are people in my life that I know mean very well, but like, I'm just not going to have a real conversation with them about health, fitness, body issue, food, training, all that. And those are the people who've got no reason to be mean to me. They're not trying to be dismissive. They wish me nothing but the best, but all that I will allow them into my life is to say things like, yeah, you know, all things in moderation.
I think my hope is that even though I might be irritating today, that maybe a year from now something I've said sinks in.
Sure.
And you start figuring it out. I mean, I've had this one woman that I've been friends with for, you know, years on Facebook. It got really upset at me 2 years ago because she had posted a picture with, I think it was back when those Cronuts were out or whatever they were. And I used her example of the picture she posted without saying her name and said, you know, here's someone who's healthy, is a healthy person, and they post this stuff and, you know, and then it sends a bad message. Got really upset with me. And
wait, now you said this on Facebook or on this podcast?
No, I said it on Facebook.
See,
you know, so never... it was in a group that she's not involved in. But what happened was, is that someone within that group that she's not involved in knows her and saw the picture and knew who it was and then reported me to her.
You got to be careful with that, man, because it's not so anonymous when it's like 10 minutes after somebody posts a cronut, you're ranting about pictures. I mean,
well, my point to her when she contacted me about it was that the reason I posted in that group is because I didn't want to call her out on it. I was using it as an example, but I didn't use her name. And, you know, and I wasn't, you know, I had a problem with who ran and reported me to her. I said, what is the end game there? What was the purpose of that?
Yeah. Right.
You know? And, but, you know, really got upset at me. But, now here 2 years later, she's saying the same thing I was saying 2 years ago. So see, she's kind of come around.
Just like we said before, Facebook is seventh grade.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
And then the same people you gossiped about it in seventh grade, now your friends in ninth grade.
Exactly.
So there you are.
Well, I got I got the best compliment from my sister a couple of weeks ago and, you know, I've talked about my sister on here before and, you know, who has health issues and she had a recent bout of some health issues that kind of scared her. And it's turned out she has thyroid issues now and things like that. And she started, you know, talking to me about it. And at the end of it, my sister is very to herself. She doesn't talk a lot about her health and her personal issues. She cares a lot about her family and everybody around her. But when it comes to herself, she's very close-lipped. So she was kind of opening.
So is this something you should say on the podcast?
Well, no, I'm not saying really anything like that. But she doesn't listen to it anyway.
Yes, but I'm saying if she's very private, whatever.
No. Okay. It's not like about that. But okay. but at the end of it, she said was like, I'm really happy that I have you around to talk to about these things. And that made me feel very good.
Good.
You know, because normally, you know, I'm the big brother and I'm not treated like that a lot of times. You know, as a big brother, you want to be the one that they come to about stuff in a way, you know, it's your role.
Right.
And I've never had that role. So it was kind of nice. It made me feel good. You know,
have you been watching Louie this season?
I haven't yet. No, I kind of tend to binge watch that too.
So Bobby Kelly, you know, plays his brother.
Yeah.
There was I just rewatched this last night with Megan. There was an episode with his brother this season. I won't tell you the whole thing since you didn't see it, but he forgot who was older. Bobby's like, come on, man, you're my little brother and you're doing better than me. And he's like, Bobby,
I'm your older brother.
I'm 47. You're 43. So then he shifts the conversation to, well, you're my older brother. You should be looking out for me. It was so funny. that guy didn't remember who was older.
Yeah.
Well, this
role shift, yeah.
I'm going to cough. Talk for a minute.
Well, you know, when it comes to things like that, I think roles shift especially as siblings get older. You only have the one sister. I mean, she's younger than you, right? You are the older brother, right?
Yeah, by 4 years.
Yeah, okay. So, but at certain times, I think when you have, you know, I have, you know, three brothers and one sister, all younger, and I think at different times in your lives, that role changes.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that in bigger families that I know.
You know, sometimes the younger brother is the older brother, at times, or Christy's always been, she's the second oldest to me, and for a long time, she was the rock of all the siblings, you know. So, you know, she's the one that everybody went to when they were in trouble and things like that, too.
Now, this conversation is segueing greatly into my note.
Oh, good.
So I've crossed out one of my four notes. This is my second note, and I've got two more. Here's my second note. I've been noticing a trend in some Facebook groups, but one of them definitely in I especially see this in our back of the pack, Tracy's group. Okay.
Back of the pack, yeah.
And we have a lot of new listeners that came to us through our involvement in that Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not picking on that group. It's every group, every running group I've seen this, but I've seen more lately in that group particularly. So this is the post that breaks my heart is when people come into their running club or group and they say, you know, I get no support out there.
Yeah.
That when I post on my wall that I'm going to sign up for a race or I did a race or something, nothing. But I come here and there's great support. So it's I got a lot of thoughts on that. And I'm just going to kind of lay them out.
Okay.
Well, so number one, that's what those groups are for. That's mm-hmm. why the benefit of Facebook, the blessing of social media, is what the blessing of internet communities have been for a long time. Just more people use them now because it's an easier interface. When you had to be a BBS user in the early 90s, that was just something nerds did. You know, so it's beautiful that people can find their communities of common interest and find support, because you don't always find support for your endeavors among the general population. That's what I call your Facebook wall. That's Gen Pop, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And part of that, let's be quite honest, why should anybody care that I'm running a half marathon? I mean, that's kind of where there's a little bit of my like, okay, why should anybody care that I run a half marathon? I mean, really, other than other runners.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of things. I mean, I bet a lot of us who wish more people gave us a congratulation, maybe we fly through our Facebook wall and see people posting about their hobbies or interests and make no comment. Maybe you do. Maybe you're the kind of person who wants to be supportive of everybody, of everything they do. And that's great. But it takes a lot of energy. Most folks aren't like that. They will be drawn to what they like. So they will. And one of the dangers of social media is we can craft our world around us where we only ever hear from people we already agree with about politics or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. So we create a false world, a little insulated world where it's an echo chamber, you know, of what we already think about or what we already like. So I'm glad people that feel they need support and like encouragement to you got this and you can do this. The running community is amazing about that. Mm-hmm. And groups like Back of Packers. I mean, that's what we're all about, that encouraging the people who maybe thought they didn't have a place before. But I'm just saying, don't put the expectation on general population that any of them should care. Now, the more heartbreaking is when I see people say, my family isn't interested.
Yeah.
My family doesn't care.
Right.
And that's a little harder. And every family's different. And every family's dynamic is different. But I don't know. There are times, too, you know, the other side of the pendulum, man, is sometimes running triathlon can be a very selfish endeavor. And the idea that we expect people to show up on their Saturday mornings to cheer us, come in last. I get why not everybody wants to do that all the time. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't support one another, but I guess I'm just saying, if you feel like you need a lot of support, yes, stay with a runner group, stay with a running club, find a group of like-minded people, because they will give you all the support in the world. I just think it might be unfair for us to expect anybody outside of the genre to really care. So there's my rant, John. I'm going to cough for about 25 minutes now. So why don't you go ahead now and unpack what I'm saying?
Well, Jennifer and I have talked about this before and managing expectations. And you tend to get a little down on yourself because, you know, you post something to the regular social media or Twitter or whatever. And, you know, you get no response or, you know, the crickets and you start feeling down about yourself, but it's really your issue because you're expecting things that maybe others, you know, aren't able to give. You know, they're just not built like that. And, you know, I just think that where I find it sad, and I'm going to agree with you here, is that the part that makes me really sad is that when somebody goes on there and they post that their spouse is unsupportive, or not even unsupportive, but actively seeks to undermine efforts.
That is troubling.
And that I really have to watch myself on how I if I'm even respond, because I think there was one on there that I can't even respond to this, because I know if I respond to this, it's going to come out really bad. And it was I think it was a woman who, she was saying that her, how her husband was really unsupportive of her running and trying to be healthy, and that she really, really wanted this wine one night, and but knew she couldn't have it because it wasn't her day to have the wine. I don't know what kind of plan she was on, and her husband, knowing this, went and opened the wine and drank it in front of her. That's a dick move. And I'm sorry, that's exactly what I wanted to say. That's a dick move.
Yeah.
And why are you with somebody like that, that would do that to you?
Right. And that's
how I come across, that's how I come from.
Cause that goes beyond whether you're a runner or not.
Right.
That's somebody,
this is just an ass.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he's an ass in other areas that you're not willing to admit to.
Yeah. It's like, is this part of his MO?
Yeah, well, I'm sure it is. He didn't just become an ass, you know. He was probably an ass the whole time.
Right.
But that stuff bothers me, you know, because I've seen examples. I'll bring up Megan again. You know, we had her husband on here, and we asked him, you know, how they balance that, because Megan's a vegan and he's not, and her kids aren't. But how do you balance that within the same household without, you know, going crazy with each other? And they have a good way of doing it. You know, they respect each other's space, you know, and I'm not going to force you to eat this, and you're not going to force, I'm not going to force you to eat that, and things like that. So you're able to do it if you respect what each other are trying to do,
right,
and what their beliefs are. But you know, when I see stories like that, and I'm sure, I mean, that was just one instance of, it was a guy doing it. I'm sure there's women out there to do it to the men too, but I think we handle it differently.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's another matter when it's relationship oriented, when somebody that you have a real relationship with, a parent, a spouse, a sibling even.
Yeah.
But I think what people have to remember too about the way Facebook operates is I've noted, you know, I'll go through my wall and be like, I haven't seen anything from so-and-so in a while. And I'll just look up their name and go to their wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't unfollow them. Now there are people I've unfollowed. So
yeah.
Here's the truth, folks. If you're a runner and all you post is stuff about running, don't be shocked if all your non-running friends just, they don't unfriend you. They just like, yeah, I see enough of this. I don't need it.
Yeah,
and they just unfollow you so you're not in their feed. I unfollow people all the time.
Yeah.
I unfollow people I like because their social media life is not one that I'm interested in.
Right.
And if I want to know what's going on in their life, I'll go look it up. But you don't see everything about all your friends. I mean, I'm up over what is it? I mean, I'm not trying to, I mean, like backdoor brag, like how many Facebook friends I have. It's just,
yeah,
you know, 500 or 600, I don't know, something like that. And they're people, not people I know. They're people I know from listening to the show that I know from like, oh, we have 15 similar, you know, or mutual friends from running groups. I'll click all the balloon people I know, you know, so like there's Facebook friends I've never met in real life. And then there's some that like I've never met, but I feel like they're like somebody I would actually really talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And I have. So, you know, just like anything, there's going to be different levels of friendship. But Facebook will edit you by basically, even if you don't like unfollow a person. Let's say there's a friend of yours that you post like you'll comment on their pictures more, or you'll click a like on a comment. Facebook puts that in their algorithm and you therefore see more of them in your feed.
Right.
Your feed not being infinite, you then see less of others. So, folks, if you're running and nobody on your Facebook wall is saying anything, it might just be your stuff's not even appearing in those people's feeds, and they don't get a chance to be supportive because they're not going out of their way looking for running stuff. But there are, I mean, my goodness gracious, there are plenty of us who are, and we'll be celebrating everybody's achievements and everybody's finishes and signing up for a first race. Though I was kind of a smart aleck the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody came in, I was at the sub-30 club, and said, do I want to sign up for another half marathon? And there's a 50 million like, yes, of course you do. And I just posted and said, you know that posting in this group, you're only going to get one response.
Right. So,
yeah, of course, yeah, we're a bunch of enablers. So if you, I don't know what you want. Maybe you do. Maybe you don't.
It almost makes me want to go on there and say, no, don't do it.
No, don't do it. Yeah, exactly. Be like the voice of dissension. And I was like, yeah, we're all, I mean, that's like, I always say, that's like going into a casino and saying, who wants to gamble? I mean, you know, should we outlaw gambling? And, you know, it's a biased crowd, dude.
It's a good example. Yeah, I like that.
That's like, oh, yeah, I forgot earlier we were talking about, you mentioned Hooters,
mm-hmm,
right? It's like walking into a Hooters with a, you know, like sign this petition from now. I mean, you know, wrong crowd. By the way, so what blew me away the other day, I read that, you know, that big biker shootout. I did not know this till I saw this in another article. The restaurant they were at is called Twin Peaks. Now, in my head,
I knew the name of the restaurant, but it went to the TV show.
Well, I thought it went to the I thought it was like, oh, some weird like David Lynch, like middle of like nowhere in Texas, right? Yes, no, exactly. Dude, you know why it's Twin Peaks?
It's a Hooters type bar.
It's a Hooters type bar.
I didn't know that either. I'm with you. I had no idea.
Oh my gosh.
Someone on the radio said that. You know that's like a Hooters, right?
Yeah, right. And I was also like, oh no. It's all coming together now, the whole scene.
But now it makes sense why it was a biker bar. Got it.
Wow, what happened? Boobs just got distracting again. What was I talking? I was talking, making a point. Yeah, I don't know, man. Don't let social media, you know, influence how you feel about yourself, whether it's looking at other people's achievements and feeling like I'm doing nothing or not enough people are liking your picture or your post.
Yeah.
It's
well, if you're going to post it, but don't get upset, you know.
Share what you
want.
Well,
and go along with the one I was just sharing. If you're going to post something like that about a dick move your husband made, don't get upset at people for calling him a dick.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So, so even though I didn't do it this time, others did. And
now, with all that said, my third note, John, I'm getting through my notes really well. We have to give a congratulations and shout out to one of our biggest listeners, Megan. Megan in Delaware.
Oh, yeah. Well,
she had a big age group award this
weekend.
Yeah,
she did. I saw that.
She did indeed. In Delaware, apparently, maybe it's because they love horses, they don't have the Athena division with Clydesdales. It's Philly.
I like that better.
Yeah, Philly's nice. Though, what was it Jennifer said when I saw her at D.C.? I'd much rather be a warrior goddess than a giant smelly horse.
That's right.
Because that was like Clydesdale versus Athena. That,
yeah, exactly.
But Megan went to a race that was like, let's see again. I want to make sure I get it right. It was a 5-miler. Yes, here it is. 5-mile run. State championship senior masters Philly division. And whoever got second is a friend of Megan's. Her name's Lori, and she tagged her here. Philly division. This was the 22nd annual. Mosser 5-miler. Yeah. And so she was first place in senior Philly, which it means older and technically heavier. But my goodness, if you look at a picture of Megan,
Megan is not heavy.
Oh, there's a heavy runner.
No, not at all.
It's hard to tell how tall she is though. Next to her friend, she's taller. Next to her husband, she's short, but he's a very, very tall man.
But he's tall, yeah.
Yeah, and he was third in Masters Clydesdale, but he's like 6'6" or something.
Yeah. Yeah, and when Elena we saw her at DC, she's not a tiny,
no.
She's not short, no.
No, so you don't think, oh, there's somebody who obviously runs it. And this is the thing, man. Ladies, we know you won't sign up and admit your weight is over, you know, whatever your standard is. But, you know, men like will always be Clydesdales because of the double standard in the world. I know. But congratulations to Megan, who's not afraid to say, yes, I'm this big, and yes, I run hard, winning first place, and yep, they did great. So
did you see that her
she's
husband?
Stylish as always. My gosh, she's got a matching headband.
Yeah, I know. She always looks good.
Matching. She always looks good running. I don't know what she said about her Barney picture from the race, but she always looked good. Now, what were you going to say about her husband, Alan?
Did you see Elena? Did you see that he went to school with or worked with Spiker?
Yeah, he knew Ted Spiker from years ago.
This is such a small world, isn't it?
It is a small world. God. I'm not singing the song, John. I heard that enough this year at Disney.
I'm telling you.
So, yeah, well, congratulations.
All we have
to
do is say the name. Now it's on everybody's head anyway.
What name?
It's a Small World.
Oh, yeah, it's a small, yeah. So, yeah, congratulations, Megan. Great job. Great run. A 5-miler. So let's see here. Alain was third. I keep saying it's more of a French pronunciation. Alain, Alain is her husband.
Is it?
So yeah. And by the way, I started a new Facebook page called Translate the Plate. It's fun. It's just a little fun thing. If you find that, folks, snap a picture of a cool, what's it called? A vanity plate, a license plate where somebody chose it and then it means something. And then we try to figure out if it means what we think it means. And because, like, I saw one, I thought it meant nose poker. Like, I know poker. But other people said, no, that plate says nose picker.
See, I would have said nose picker, too.
See, I thought it was like, I know poker. But then it was, I saw the driver, and I didn't. Well, you never know with poker. But, like, it, Megan said.
It was a scratch, not a.
Well, her husband. Scratch, yeah, right, exactly. Seinfeld coming to Hulu. Seinfeld was coming to Hulu. Megan said her husband used to have one when he played basketball, and since his last name is Nana Sinkam, it's hyphenated S-I-N-K-A-M is the last part. Mm-hmm. He had his nickname was Sinkam, like S-I-N-K-E-M, like sink them. Yeah. As a basketball player, he had that as a
plate. About a perfect name for a basketball player.
I know, right? Sinkam, perfect.
It'd be like his name was Ken Dribbler,
or something. Dribbler. So. Anyway, so that was my third note. So right when I went from don't worry if people aren't congratulating you on Facebook to congratulating somebody from something I saw on Facebook. But that's because we're runner friends. We're runner friends. This is what social media does. It creates different little worlds for us.
I tell you, some of the best people I've met through social media are because of the running and the triathlon. So, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the most interesting people and crazy people I've met have been social media. One of them in my balloon twister world, there's a guy. I actually blocked somebody on Facebook. I never blocked anybody before. Mm. I didn't even block people who've unfriended me because they didn't like that, you know, they didn't think I was radical enough one way or the other in politics. No, this guy is from Vermont and he's a lunatic. And I would almost say his name on air just in case you ever take your children to wherever he might be twisting balloons. The guy's nuts.
Guys, like dangerous nuts, or
I don't know, man. He says he's been in the business for years, but I mean, there's a lot of people that, you know, do their job just fine and then turn around and on their drive home, would tell you that, the Coast Guard shot down a Flight 800 over New York back in 90. I mean, there are people and they really believe that and they have their little meetings and all that, so. Yeah, I might have told the story. I used to play. I played in a band very, very briefly. I played bass in a three-piece band, and the leader was brilliant, a good songwriter, really good instrumentalist, and taught me basically bass. Mm-hmm. After seeing me play guitar, you know, seemed like a pretty normal guy, for a musician. Until one night when we were playing bass at 2 a.m. He told me that the Coast Guard was trying to prove to the New York City Transit Authority that they controlled the drug trade coming into New York, so they shot down an airliner. And really meant it. And I was like, this is the beginning of the end of this relationship one way or another. So, anyway, you get this. John, I have one more note, something we got to talk about.
Okay.
Challenge.
I've had that on my notes for a couple of weeks, and just haven't managed to get to it.
Well, we've had guests, and now we've had guests, so it's just us. challenge. Some of you may recall about this time last year, I was getting excited to go down to Atlantic City to what originally I was going to, coughing again. There I go again. Mm-hmm. Originally, I thought I'd do Challenge Atlantic City as an Aqua Velo, as a lead up to what was going to be Mount Tremblant. That didn't happen. I decided on a relay team and got myself on a relay team and then decided I wasn't ready and dropped out of my own relay team and finally just went down to volunteer. And I had a great weekend volunteering with the kids. And a feature part of our weekend was meeting a couple pros. My daughter got a quick snapshot with Rennie Carfrae. But we went to the big book signing this meet and greet signing with Macca and got our Wheaties boxes signed, all that stuff. But we've had a couple people who finished Challenge Atlantic City, people I met there, as well as the race director was on their show. I'd like to have him back on after this year because Steve Del Monte is running some great races in New Jersey. Escape the Cape is happening again this year. A really iconic race. They're hoping to make a big deal. Well, it is a big deal. But anyway, so Challenge, though, there's a little bit of a wobble on what's going on with Challenge, and I want to see it do well, and I want to see the Atlantic City race do well because I've been assured by Steven that I can defer from this year where I was signed up immediately. to next year. Because last year I signed up like 4 days before I went in the hospital and had my wacky surgery. And the last year has not been an Ironman prep kind of year. So Challenge, you know, we at the time we were very optimistic. Challenge is entering the U.S. market in a big way. And then with the merger, or really more technically buyout of Rev3, you've got this big brand with all these races now built in. They're not anti-WTC, but they're a nice alternative where if you're family-oriented and you want your kids to cross the line with you, Challenge and Rev3 encourage that. So a little different flavor than WTC, but still a lot of hype, big party and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're finding out, John, what's the big news coming out of Challenge?
Well, they're both cutting and removing prize purses to some of their races. And, well,
that is is that ever a good sign is really the question.
It's never a good sign. And the reasoning behind it from what I was reading initially was that they're saying that the pros are not enough pros are entering the races. Is that what you saw?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know how true that is, but
well, the counter to that though that I've read is that but they're not signing up right away. When you're a pro, it's not like if you're just a normal person and you want to sign up for a race, Ironman's got it where you have to sign up a year out.
Right.
Or maybe even don't get in that way.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a pro, you have a little more leeway in your schedule. Not making the life of a pro triathlete sound easy. I mean, from what I've seen of it, you basically go broke being a pro.
Right.
But nonetheless, if there are races that offer a prize purse, you can do well if you're a winner. But you got to choose carefully what you're going to race. And Challenge was putting it out there like, okay, the only way we're going to draw talent away from Kona slots is if it's more profitable for you to do other races besides WTC races chasing Kona points.
Right.
Well, now what incentive is there for a pro?
So exactly. Like
that race I went to last year, you could tell, I mean, and I'm not saying it was like you could tell like it was a secret. It was well known that Macca is a paid like brand ambassador for Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So he's there because, you know, he's got an investment there. Last year, Tim O'Donnell and Marinda Carfrae both did the race, you know, and it was a very competitive race. There were a couple pros that were of like names that you'd recognize from Kona kind of pros last year. But I'm sure they had an appearance fee. You know, it was definitely a kind of like, okay, we can advertise that we have these pros coming, and they did for many months. So I'm sure there was some kind of appearance fee for them to, you know, and a first year race, that makes sense. I mean, people criticize that kind of activity. It makes total sense when you're building a brand.
Right.
So that first year you're going to do Challenge Atlantic City, first, you know, 140.6 from Challenge in the U.S. Sure, do all that. But already in the second year, not only are they not doing appearance fees, they're pulling out any kind of prize money for pros.
Yeah.
That, I don't know, man. I don't know what that means.
Well, I mean.
And it comes down
to. Like you said, it's not going to be good. It can't be a good thing, but. I mean, did they perhaps like just bite off more than they could chew with taking on all the Rev 3 stuff? I mean, were they just not ready for it yet? And they figured it out afterwards. But
well, then within the last year, also, they did a major event with major money. Challenge Bahrain. Did you watch any of that online? Because it was live streamed online.
Yeah, I saw like bits and pieces of it. Yeah.
So there, I mean, we're talking about a huge prize purse, but basically, some rich sheik from Bahrain wanted to triathlon to do well. So, as a benefactor, he really kickstarted that, is my understanding. Now, I could have this wrong, and if somebody knows this stuff, we should have asked Tom Demerly last week, because Tom, you know,
he would have.
Tom
known
knows
it, yeah.
This stuff, but I watched some of that online, and it was like, yeah, this is a step toward Challenge being a true competitor to WTC. But it didn't take long to cut prize purses out totally. Now, we've been through that conversation before. Of, you know, do you really think that pro showing up at a race affects guys like us, whether or not we're going to pay for a race?
I don't even look at it, to be honest with you. I mean, I found out that, you know, a couple years ago when I did St. Anthony's that Rennie was going to be there, but I found that out after I entered it. I had no idea. And it wouldn't have mattered to me either way. I don't care. And, you know, so I don't think to the majority of it, it does matter. So
there's got to be a level at which, though, it has to, like, I'm just thinking this from a corporate branding perspective. Like, you know, this is totally unrelated, but why do Coke and Pepsi need to advertise? Is there anybody left that hasn't heard of Coke and Pepsi?
Yeah, yeah,
you know, exactly. And brand loyalties are pretty well set, but yet they still have enormous, enormous marketing budgets.
That reminds me of that scene. Have you seen the movie Dave?
Yeah.
Yeah, remember that scene when he's going, when he gets everybody together to go over the budget, to cut money from the budget?
Right.
And he's talking, and he talks about to the Department of Transportation. He goes, so you've got $1.6 billion in the advertising budget. And he's, yes, Mr. President. And he goes, so we're basically spending $1.6 billion on advertising to make people feel good about something they've already bought.
Right.
And he goes, yes, Mr. President. He goes, okay, we're going to cut that one then. And he just slashes it off the budget. But, you know, that just reminds me. I was like,
I'm sure.
Why are you spending this money?
But I'm sure the CEOs of Coke know something about what they're doing. They maintain
I don't know about that.
They maintain their status as brand number one because they. Well, I don't know. I don't know why, and that's why I'm not the CEO of Coke, because I'm not worth that millions and millions of dollars. But it seems to me like if you say, let's take the other one. Let's take WTC as an example. Mm-hmm. So why is it people sign up a year ahead or volunteer to do a race just so they can be in line to sign up for and volunteer for a company that's not that's not giving money to the local charity? Regardless of what pros show up, we know the answer to that.
Yeah,
because they own the word Iron Man,
right?
So you have the you have earned the right to call yourself Iron Man if you finish that race.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what can Challenge offer? And it's still a little unclear. So I just think a pro presence legitimizes a series, some way or another. Even if you're not necessarily like, ooh, so-and-so's doing this race, I'll do that. I think in general, though, a pro presence and a pro start tells you you're at a legit event, subconsciously at least. Don't you think that's part of it? What do you think?
Well, yeah, I do think that. They do think that's part of it, but I think maybe they should be going. I'm not up on who their sponsors are. I know, like, we know that Mac is on there, but shouldn't they be going after some of these pro athletes? Well, let me look at here. It says pro athletes right here. No, it's not telling you who it is, but I would think that they should go after the pro athletes that maybe are younger. Not saying that Mac is old, but
well, he is.
Somebody that's more, maybe they need to go after Jorgensen or
like somebody who's big on the ITU circuit and she's tearing it up right now.
Yeah.
There's talk of like trying to encourage the Javier Gomez and like the Brownlee brothers to start doing 70.3s.
Right.
But right now, I mean, there's actual money to be made in ITU.
Okay. I see money to be made. So. I just found the pro athletes that are on there. So it's Aniko Llanos, Timo Bracht. See that? Heather Wortley. I've heard of her.
Yeah.
Nils Frumhold. Don't even know who that is. You know, Tim Reed. I know who that is. Miranda Caffrey. She's on there.
Yeah.
That's odd.
So here's the thing. I mean, I'm looking. What list are you looking at again?
I went to the Challenge Family site and went under Pro Athletes, and it said Pro Athlete Profiles.
Well, and that may be, they might need to update that because, mm-hmm. I just Googled it quick and I found at triathlete.com, February 12th of this year, Challenge Family announces the prize purse structure in the Americas.
Yeah.
So that was only a couple months back.
Yeah.
2 months late, February, wait, March, April, May, 3 months.
Yeah.
1 quarter later, maybe it's a fiscal thing.
They're cutting stuff.
Three months later, after announcing the structure, they're announcing there will be, forget the structure, we're not doing it at all.
And it's because they're saying that people the pros are not signing up in time. So people are not signing up because none of the pros are signing up. That one's begetting the other. And
yeah, it's
I don't know if I buy it, but
yeah, it's a weird cycle. I don't know where to get in on it. I think it'll be very telling to see, where things go with the AC race, especially being kind of a flagship race of Challenge at the full distance.
Yeah.
For at least in a region where there's tons and tons of triathletes, Now, the first year they announced it really late in, you know, relative to how long people train for and choose their long distance race for the year. So they had a full year now, though, from last year, this year. So this is the year that should really count to see how many are signed up, whether it's going to go ahead. Dude, for all I know, it could be the second two and done, and my deferral for 2016 won't exist, and I basically just, you know, lost my money for a race. But, you know, that's what you do when you sign up and then get sick right away. I'm not so worried about that. It's just like I'd like to do a full distance race next year, and I'd like it to be that one. I like the race. Regardless of what some of the participants think about my politics, I like the race. And I like the place, and I like all the people I met.
He's a crazy person.
Even the crazy person. I like crazy. I love crazy people. Just, I don't know, man. At some point, I'm like, all right, we're done. So who knows? I think time's going to tell. Will this have an effect? There's a billion. If you want opinions on it, just go to Slow Twitch and look for some discussion on Challenge Pro Prize Purse, I guess. I don't know. You know, we're not necessarily the guys to analyze that the best, but we like having race options, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You brought up the Ironman word. I have one more thing. And I'm not sure if I talked about this on the show or not. So if I did, stop me. But I got into a discussion online. I think it was actually in the Big Guys group, or it was in Back of the Pack. But it was a woman asked about that she has friends that do triathlons, and she hears it both referred to as an Ironman and a 70.3. Her question was, what's the difference? You know, and so my response, you know, I was one of the first responders. I said, well, the difference is Ironman's a brand, not a distance. Okay. When you say Ironman, that means it's an Ironman branded race. But you can have a 70.3 or a 140.6. It's not Ironman. You know, and usually what I said to me, you know, if I say it's a 70.3, that means it's not an Ironman race. Or I'll say Ironman Augusta, you know, if it's Ironman.
And see, I think the exact opposite, John. And this is
what I'm
like. Yes.
Okay.
I refuse to refer to a 70.3 as an Ironman.
Well, that's.
I just can't do it.
Okay. Well,
if it's a. I don't. That's. And this is why I'm saying WTC has muddied this water themselves.
Right. Yes.
It was on a discussion of half marathons because we were both in that discussion.
Okay. You saw it. Okay. Yeah, you saw that.
Because there's somebody who commented, like, why would you brag about doing half of anything?
Yeah.
Which is kind of a funny. You know, I get that.
That's what it was.
And the. And what most responsible were, actually, nobody really puts up a sticker that says half marathon. They put it at 13.1.
13.1.
Right. And like my sticker is a 70.3. It doesn't say half Ironman, but I always refer my event as a half. I don't like hearing Ironman Augusta without numbers. It implies.
Oh, because it implies the full.
Yes.
I gotcha.
You see what I mean?
I gotcha.
Yeah. And that's why I don't. And yeah, that's why. Yeah, WTC branded.
Yeah, because you know, it's
should
an assumption.
They,
it,
should
for me,
they,
it's an assumption. Yeah. You know that Ironman Augusta is not a 40.6 race.
No, never makes.
So
see, that's
this,
just it.
See, it's my assumption. Yes.
And
no,
see,
you're right. You're right.
Yeah, and Ironman knows. See, Ironman's tricky, man.
Did you saw the guy? You saw the guy on there though that was arguing it. He said, if you do a 70.3, that's an Ironman.
I don't remember seeing that.
You didn't see that?
No, I don't remember.
Yeah, go back and look at it. He said, if you've done a 140.6 miles, you've done an Ironman.
Yeah.
No, you haven't.
No. Well, you just said 70.3.
Well, he said 140.6 too.
No. Now get what he said right, because he said, if you go on that distance, that's Ironman. I don't care who owns the race. And I kind
that's,
of agree
all right.
with him. I agree with him on that. Yeah, dude, when I do the, look, I'm Doughboy to Ironman, right? When I get there, if I do challenge race, are you going to tell me, well, your blog's not done yet because you didn't do a WTC branded race? Because if that's the case, I'm already there. Because I did Eagle Man. Eagle Man was a WTC 70. Is Eagle Man Iron Man Eagle Man 70.3?
Mm-hmm.
So no, I think the spirit of Iron Man is in that distance. That's what when people say Iron Man, they are thinking of that distance. If they're only thinking even of just the race that's on Hawaii, the race from Hawaii that's on TV. Using it in reference to a half without using the word half is what I think muddies the water and confuses people, especially because, look, let's face it, dude, most people are not into triathlon the way those of us who follow it are, and we'll know that branding from, because so many people in that thread were like, wait, you mean you can't use the word Iron Man if you're not under that company? No, you can't. So I think the general public doesn't realize that because nobody copyrighted Marathon, you know?
Right.
And so that's where I'm coming from, that, yeah, I know they own it. I know they have every right to brand it as 70.3 and Iron Man. I've done a half. I'm not going to say I did Iron Man because, oh, well, I did it under the right company, but mm-hmm. I did half the race of what a real Iron Man is. So that's why, you know, it gets frustrating, but I don't want to make that claim of something I absolutely did not do yet. I will.
Yeah, same. Yeah. I do look at it as a brand.
Down lately.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going to say, what's wrong with Andy?
What's wrong with Andy?
Three surgeries, people!
Sound better than you did at the beginning, though.
I'm talking about the Sudafed, yeah. Man. The Sudafed's kicking in.
I'll
need just some NyQuil, and I won't make any plans for the next 3 days.
But I guess I come from that. I always looked at Iron Man as the brand. If I go out and do a Challenge Family 140.6 race, that does not qualify me to put an MDOT sticker on my calf.
Okay, because
it's not an iron.
Why would you put a sticker on your calf?
Or a tattoo is what I'm saying. The MDOT tattoo.
Now see, are we really going to go down this road? Okay, A, you can tattoo whatever you want
I know that. But
B, if you want a tattoo to commemorate doing the distance.
But I wouldn't. I wouldn't put that. I guess that's where I'm coming from. And, you know, I wouldn't put, if I wanted to do that, I would not put an MDOT sticker on my body if it was not an Ironman race.
But if it was an Ironman race, you would consider it?
Maybe.
So
I probably would.
All right. So let me come up with a metaphor and you tell me if it's fair.
Okay.
To me, first of all, I'm going to get an Iron Man tattoo, and it's going to have nothing to do with an MDOT, and not because I didn't do the MDOT brand. For me, and I'm going to offend a few listeners, it's the most uncreative tattoo you can possibly get.
People try to get creative with it.
I have seen it. I've seen cool ones with, like, the Texas flag, if you did Texas. I mean, yeah. But just a simple MDOT in your thigh or your calf, just so people know when you're running, no. Come on, man. Do better than that. By the way, I think I finally figured out what mine's going to look like, but let's train first. To me, because they've copyrighted it and said this is our brand name now, even though people know Iron the Distance, what it is, what it is, that would be like saying, all right, I'm going to break the world record for, well, let's not even make a world record, something a person could do. Okay, let's say a person wanted to, what's a big deal to bench press, John? Can a normal mortal bench press 500 pounds if they train?
No. 300 probably.
300, okay.
Yeah.
300 is a benchmark that a guy could shoot for.
Yeah.
I literally don't know. Benchmark. See, there we go. I'm going to set a life goal. To not cough for 5 hours.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to set a life goal. I'm going to bench press 300 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? If I ever make that goal, I'm going to get a tattoo to celebrate it, to mark that like milestone in my life. Okay. Mm-hmm. To represent all the training. Let's say I design a thing and I show to my tattoo artist, there's a picture of a guy on a bench and he's lifting the plates or the bar with all the plates. And for simplicity, the plates all say York Barbell because that's an iconic barbell company.
Correct.
But I only trained using other things. I wasn't really lifting York barbells. Are the pounds still the same? So there's a weight question. Does a York barbell, 300 pound, does a York 50 pound plate weigh the same as a Weider 50 pound plate?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is yes. And so for me, that's my weird metaphor that you can, if you're going to lift the weight, it doesn't matter what the brand of the weightlifting equipment is, so long as it's a brand that you can trust to be accurate in its poundage. By the same token, if you do a 140.6 mile triathlon that is broken down into a 2.4 mile swim, a 112 mile bike ride, and a 26.2 mile run, you have done Ironman. I could give a crap about the brand name of the race company that put it on. If the tattoo says to the world Iron Man, the tattoo says to the world Iron Man. That's what I'm coming up with, and I just came up with that metaphor on the spot, so it may be a little off, but that's what I'm thinking. But you know what? I'll worry about my tattoo once I get up to the point where I can run a half marathon again before I start worrying about.
I think I'm worried about that tattoo. I actually like the old Rev 3 tattoo, the logo better than Iron Man tattoo nice. Anyway.
Well, I love the challenge logo. Actually, that's
The challenge logo too.
The challenge logo is something I'd consider doing in a mashup. Like I even saw somebody did like the M dot and then the circle part was challenge.
Oh, see, I was just thinking that. Why don't you make the circle part the challenge?
Well, and so that's just it being that. Yes. Yeah, so Iron Man, the M dot is a registered trademark of a company. However, again, to me, it just comes to what's the spirit of Iron Man? What does Iron Man invoke? It's not a company. It's a distance. And so if it's important to somebody to use that icon, and you know, are you an Iron Man if Mike Riley doesn't say your name coming across the line? I sure hope so. You know,
I actually like that idea that the M dot with that challenge family dot.
Yeah. If you like stuff, that's a logo that people recognize, I would do that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so there's my, see if I can come up with other metaphors for that. So there's some where you and I come from different angles. So anyway,
yeah, but like I said, I could be persuaded.
You can be persuaded. I can be persuaded.
I see your argument.
Yeah, I just don't want, because like I already have people in my life who are being supportive and are like, "How's marathoning going?" I'm not a marathoner. Like, what are you talking about? You're running all the time. I'm like, no. Yeah, I'm a runner, but a marathon is a very specific distance and it's a very big challenge. And I would never use that word to describe what I do yet. Yeah. Now, when I finish my marathon.
How far was your marathon yesterday?
Yeah, right. That kind of thing.
3 miles, miles.
And, you know, and runners make fun of non-runners for not knowing that. But just, you know, I don't expect, I'm trying to think things I don't know about. You know, like I don't expect to know all the details of somebody else's interest. Mm-hmm. And as we did go over before, the early days of marathoning in this country, there were varying distances and lots of things got called marathons until it was standardized. So there is history, but yeah, I'll just say, oh no, I've done half marathons and I've done some other kinds of races, but I haven't done the full Monty yet, you know, and that will maybe lead to how long's a marathon? And I'll just tell them, you know, and that kind of thing. But, so that's what I'm thinking about this week.
Okay, it's always funny that on races on weeks like this, that we're actually coming. It's just going to be us, and you know, God, what are we going to talk about? And then we end up 2 hours later.
Yeah, I know, right? Look, it's like 1:50 right now.
That's what I have too.
But I kept making notes when we first started talking, and now I'm out of notes.
I've got like a page full of notes here now.
Well, did we congratulate Dave Jimenez last week? We should. Well, I don't even know if we did, but I think we mentioned it. Yeah, go over to Octane, check out his race report.
Yeah.
We'll have to have him back. Oh, yeah, because we were, well, what we said we should mention is that, yeah, speaking of bashing WTC, they took the special needs bags away.
Yeah, I've never heard of that at an Ironman race. That's the first I've ever heard of that.
Yeah.
Why would you do that if you had people still on the course?
Yeah, so there's a little complaint about WTC's way of
doing it. Yeah, that's amazing to me. But I mean, and he wasn't last.
No.
So that means he was not the only one affected by that.
No.
So
well, yeah, and he's even listening to his race report on the podcast, he said, you know, well, he wasn't even last on the bike, whereas meaning that, you know, he had done an Ironman in 15 hours before, and that's a different course, maybe a little harder. But you know, he finished in 16:50.
Yeah.
And might, you know, had he not missed what he had there for his special needs, he might have had a little more pick me up.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless, you know, if you spend that kind of money to be in a race and you have very clear cutoffs that everyone knows about when courses are open and
right,
then your special needs should not just disappear, you know, because it's late. You know, well, it'd be one thing if he came in after the cutoff and they're like, all right, you can still go run, but the special needs are gone. That'd be one thing.
Yeah,
but he did. He was all within the parameters. So shame on you, Texas.
Anyway, that's Texas.
What are you gonna do, John? I wrote down a quote here that's maybe not related to the show, maybe related to something that we talked about or not. But I was okay. I'm going through Mad Men again now that we finished the whole thing. I just finished season one, and Joan says to Peggy, "Sometimes when people get what they want, they realize how limited their goals were."
I like that.
So maybe we should always set goals a little beyond what we can do, otherwise they wouldn't really be goals.
Yeah.
All right, John. Think that's it for this week?
I think that's it.
Well, going back to your race report, do you have any thoughts on how we should close out the show?
As far as
nah, dude, because yeah, I think
I have the word.
Oh, you got
it? Do you want me to do the whole thing?
Sure.
Okay. So for this week, for the, I almost said Iron Man Year One podcast. Can you believe I said?
I was thinking it too.
Oh, John. My God. Talk of. So for Back of Pack Endurance, this is Andy and John saying swim calm, bike strong, and run steady.